one of the owners of Wintellect.
Yes.
And you've done tons of work with Microsoft technology.
Yes, I have.
We just want to have a quick chat with you. How are you doing? Tell us about yourself.
Hey, I'm doing okay. Tell you a little bit about myself?
Sure.
Well, I've been working with Microsoft technology since DOS days, so like early 1980s.
Wow.
And then I started using Windows 1.0, then started programming against Windows 2.0, and then 3.0, 3.1, then NT, and now, of course, .NET, Common Language Runtime, and so on. I am a co-founder of Wintellect. We do training, debugging, and consulting services for people. Wintellect.com. And here, I got the plug in.
Good.
I've been, since October of 1999, I've been consulting on the Common Language Runtime team. I'm part of the version architecture team. We work on versioning of assemblies, add-ins, people that want to build a host application, let third parties create components that plug into that.
Sure.
And I've gone to some other design meetings and things like that, and architecture of the runtime.
Okay.
And I love it there.
Excellent. So now in 2.0,
yeah.
Is there any improvement in terms of hosting the CLR and versioning?
Oh, I mean, there's a ton of stuff. There's a lot of stuff in the CLR 2.0. Some of the big features were certainly done for SQL Server, UConn, to host the runtime and make it so that the runtime was more robust, more reliable, higher performance, and so on. Be able to host managed code into it, but then the unmanaged host can unload that managed code if it needs to or if it seems think it's causing problems and things like that. So there's a ton of work done in that area.
Okay.
In the runtime.
And is it able to override the threading model at all?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, because I'd imagine it's important for SQL.
Yeah, SQL Server, there's a mode where you can run it in fiber mode. And so it's allowed to take over all the memory management stuff and say, look, this is the only memory you're allowed to have. And then the garbage collector knows it's only allowed to give out that much. It can take over the threading model. It can take over security. So certain API calls, the host can say, no, I'm not going to let you make those calls and things like that.
So since you're, I would argue, and I think it's obvious, you're a real consumer of our technologies. You take our technology, you build things on it, you experience with it. So without, you know, the marketing, typical kind of marketing pitch, what is it about ASP.NET 2.0 that you like the most? Not ASP.NET, but .NET 2.0 and .NET managed code in general. We always hear the same things about productivity and type safety, et cetera.
I would say the same things.
Sure.
Yeah, certainly. It's a more productive platform with it. It makes building things that were hard before much, much easier to do now. It does have its own set of problems, its own set of issues. So I think a lot of people think you get a bunch of stuff for free and they don't have to learn as much as they had to. I just think it's a different memory management system, so you need to learn the way that works. It's a different security system with code access security, so now you need to learn how that works. It's a different loader to find files on their disk, so now you need to learn how that works and versioning issues and things like that. I think a lot of people think they can just sit down and start being productive right away, which is largely true, but then when you're trying to make something a real commercial shipping product, then there's a bunch of other issues that you need to worry about yourself. So it doesn't all come for free.
Absolutely. And you probably want to still be a good engineer.
Yeah, I think it's very important. And the runtime makes that harder, really, because you're abstracted further away from the hardware and from the operating system. And to a large extent, the runtime is a big black box. It does a lot of stuff for you. The internals of it have changed pretty radically from version to version. So once you really understand the innards, sometimes that changes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot you can do about that. Sometimes it's documented, sometimes it's not.
Sure.
You know, and that makes it a little bit tougher in that regard.
Absolutely. Now, you've also done a lot of programming. You've written books, Win32 programming, etc. So, did you give up on C++? You still using it? I mean, we always hear this battle that's going on with managed code and the future of C++. Strassup just recently wrote that paper about his ideas of the future of C++, and etc. And there is the notion of management and making it easier for people to use C++, because traditionally it's a hard language to use. So are you using managed C++, or are you just using C# for all your .NET?
I pretty much use, so first of all, I've always considered myself to be a platform guy.
Okay.
I've always been about the operating system and its services. So I was really a Windows guy, and now I'm a Common Language Runtime guy. You can work with any programming languages on top of those platforms. And yes, I chose C and C++ back in the Win32 days, and I'm choosing C#. Now in the Common Language Runtime days. I have done very little C++, manage C++ programming. I've toyed with it a little bit. There is talk, and it's very likely, in fact, I'm currently revising my .NET book for WIDBI, and it'll be a C# book, okay. But it is very likely that I'll be working with somebody to turn it into a C++ version of that book as well. So both of those will be out, and then, of course, I'll learn a lot more. I had done the VB version of my book for version 1.0 of the runtime, okay. And I learned a lot about VB there. Unfortunately, sales of the book have not been that good, so we're not going to do a would-be version of the VB
Come on,
edition.
People. What's going on?
Yeah, well, I think the level that I write to is doesn't hit that market well.
Okay.
I think that's what it is.
And
whereas the C++ market, I think I would hit that much better.
Absolutely.
And the C# market.
Well, I mean, I know that in would-be you'll be able to compile unmanaged C++ to MSIL. By the MSIL switch. I don't know what they're going to actually
The CLR switch. But, I mean, that was even doable way back when, if we're talking about the same thing.
So, basically, I can take my entire program and have it output MSIL.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. There are certain places where it falls. Yeah, that was in there in version 1.0. It was called the It Just Works switch internally.
Okay.
Because everybody was amazed, but it just works.
Uh-huh.
But it's officially, it's the /CLR switch to the compiler. And, yeah, that's been in there for quite some time.
Excellent.
It doesn't always convert everything to IL. Like if you have a function that has inline assembly language in it, obviously x86 assembly cannot be converted to IL directly. So
sure.
In that case, it emits that function in native code still.
Excellent.
But, yeah.
So one of the things with 2.0, everybody's talking about generics, and that's obviously gigantic and huge.
Yeah.
But what else? What else is so fascinating? What are some of the other new features?
Well, I don't work with ASP.NET very much. I'm mostly a server-side guy and not UI-related stuff. But the C# team has added a bunch of new stuff. I like the anonymous methods feature in C# 2.0. I mean, the iterator thing is kind of fun to play with, and it can be used in certain situations, but I think it's very compelling for people who want to use it, but the performance is not as good as people think it is, so I would be very cautious about using that. In tools or utilities where you don't care about performance, it's great. Again, makes you very productive.
Uh-huh.
But the cost of it is fairly high once you start seeing what the compiler actually is doing for you behind the covers. It's kind of expensive. I mean, certainly, probably the biggest improvements for me and my clients that I consult with uh-huh. is just the improvements to the runtime internals. The reduction of the working set, the reliability, robustness, exception handling improvements. Like now the runtime, whenever a thread gets an unhandled exception, it kills you. Whereas before, sometimes it would swallow the exception and let you keep running. That was really the wrong decision to make, because then you would have errors in your program that were hidden from you. Mm-hmm. Now the runtime exposes those errors, so you're going to find them, you'll fix them, before you end up shipping your product out to customers. That's a big improvement. I think the reliability, the robustness are really the big improvements. Calling through a delegate, the performance of that has just gone way up now. It's much quicker calling through a delegate to get to some other method. Delegates used to have a much higher cost before. So they've done some really nice things to clean up the internals and improve performance. That's really good for customers. Personally, I do a lot with threading and concurrency.
Uh-huh.
And assisting threading namespace was a disaster, in my opinion,
okay.
in 1.0 and 1.1. And it has been greatly improved in 2.0. There's now a semaphore class, for example. With mutexes, you can be notified when they're abandoned. You couldn't do that before. You can open up the events, the kernel objects, the events, the kernels, and the semaphores. You could never open them before or create them with string names before, but now you can.
Okay.
So there's been a lot of improvements there in the would-be addition for threading.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's really nice.
Because concurrency is a big problem. I mean, it's hard to write multi-threaded code correctly, even if you're a very good programmer. And as you had mentioned, it seems like it's by its nature difficult in managed code, but it seems like maybe it's not. I mean, to be able to write truly concurrent code and managed.
Yeah, multi-threaded code is just hard.
Yeah.
And I think it's just because people are not trained to think about multiple things at one time. And it's just how disturbing is it to you when you get interrupted? You know, you're busy working on something, and then all of a sudden the phone rings, right? And I know that sometimes pisses me off a great deal. You know, if somebody rings a doorbell and I have to get up and leave what I'm doing. And that's really what multi-threading is all about. You have to start thinking, well, I'm too busy doing this task, but you can be interrupted. And then somebody else could want your time or access this resource you're trying to. I think it's really hard.
Sure.
In fact, I just agreed to do a concurrency column for MSDN Magazine. Yeah, I'm very excited about it. I love doing threading and concurrency-related stuff. I don't know why. It's a weird thing.
Because it's very challenging.
I guess so. And I like working on the loader and stuff. These low-level things are stuff have always appealed to me. So the first article of which I submitted, but it hasn't come out yet, I think it's going to be in the September issue of MSDN Magazine, the first article.
Cool. And, of course, this becomes a much more interesting or important topic anyway with the advent of multi-core processors.
Agreed.
Because you'll really need to know how to write multi-threaded code, and we'll really need to enable it, developers, to readily write it without having to be, you know, a co-founder of Winelect and author of several highly technical books. But you're going to be at the PDC. PDC is coming up, pre-conference, excellent. What type of, you know, what's the flavor?
Well, basically the talk is supposed to be an all-day talk. You're already familiar with 1.0 and 1.1, versions 1.0 and 1.1 of the runtime and the base class library.
Uh-huh.
And so in one day, it's like what's been added to that or what's changed in that to give you version 2.0.
Okay.
And then, of course, the PDC is supposed to be things that are beyond 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm the pre-conference to kind of get you ready for the rest of the PDC in the CLR and base class library technologies.
Fantastic. And we've talked a little bit about what the changes are in 2.0. You talk about the low-level internals, lots of changes. That's excellent. Exception mm-hmm. handling, performance, reliability. Can we talk for a second about anonymous methods? Just like,
sure.
Like, can you define them and tell us what they are. I mean, is it so? It's a method that can exist without being bound to a type.
No, it's bound to a type, but it has no name. Or it's the compiler creates the name for you. Really, is what happens, and so you don't actually know what the name of the method is. It's a syntactical convenience is the main thing that it's providing you. In fact, anonymous methods is not a feature of the runtime. It's a feature of the C# compiler.
Okay.
And there has been a bunch of improvements in C# with related to delegates. For people coming from a C or C++ background like myself, if you ever want to get the address of a function, you would just give the name of the function. And in the manage world, you have to new up a delegate and then pass to the delegate constructor the name of the function. And that's very unnatural to have to create an object in order to get a pointer to a function. Again, mostly for people coming from a C or C++ background. So C# 2.0 now gives you the ability to just give the name of the function without newing up the delegate. So in your source code, it just looks a lot cleaner. It looks like you're just giving the name of the method there.
I see.
That's one feature, and I've actually used that quite a bit. And it makes reading the code and maintaining the code a lot nicer. That is not anonymous methods. Mm-hmm. But now, the C# 2.0, they also give you the ability to say, instead of giving the name of the function, you can actually write the code for the function right in line.
Wow.
And then the compiler takes that code out and puts it into a method, and it gives the name of the method, and then it puts the name of the method there where you put the code originally.
Okay.
And they don't tell you what the name of the method is. It's compiler-generated, and that's why it's called an anonymous method.
Very interesting.
I think it has to be used judiciously. Like, I have a personal rule where I won't put more than 3 lines of code inside an anonymous method, and that even includes comments. So if I had 2 lines of comments, I would write 1 other line of actual code in there, and that would be the end of it.
Hmm.
Otherwise, you're really writing this code for this method that's inside this other method, and it becomes actually awkward to look at.
Sure.
And it would actually hurt maintainability. And debugging is a little bit difficult because the name of the method, you don't know what it is. So if you're looking at a call stack or something, the method's hidden from you.
Mm.
And when you're stepping through in the debugger, you're stepping through code that's in the middle of this other method. Mm. So it's a nice feature, but it has to be used cautiously.
Yeah, I mean it begs the question, when would I use it? What would be...
Well, it's really
when
useful.
Would you use it? I mean, like you said, coming from the C++ world or whatever, but let's just, in our world. So when would I want to use an anonymous method?
Typically when you just want to do one thing. Like, we have a bunch of new methods on array and on list to for each over them or to sort the elements in it. And whenever you want to sort all the elements in an array or inside a list, you have to pass a pointer to a callback function. And the callback function does the comparison of 2 items and returns which one should come first. A lot of times that's a very simple like if test, and you return minus one, zero, or positive one out of the method. Mm-hmm. And in that case, the callback code is really simple. It's a perfect place for an anonymous method to go. If you want to just display all the elements in the array or in the list out, you could call a for each method, not the for each statement in C#, but the new for each method that's on these array class and the list class, and pass in a little anonymous method there to, let's say, console write line it or display it in a message box. So a single line of code, then the code's very easy to read and understand and maintain in that case. When it starts getting more complicated in the callback, I would make it a separate function.
Fantastic. Now, are you spending most of your time in VisualStudio.net and the IDE, or do you still have your own preferred IDE?
I've always used Visual Studio. Well, I use Notepad a lot, too.
You do?
Yeah, when still? I teach a class, yeah, I still
wow.
do. I mean, not for serious stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I'm working on the book or I'm learning a new technology that's yeah. been added to the runtime or something, I write these little tiny programs that are generally just a couple lines long to try an anonymous method and see what happens. And I'll typically write that in Notepad.
Okay.
Visual Studio does magic mm-hmm. for people, and I want to demystify the magic and understand what's really happening under the covers. So for that reason, I tend to use Notepad, and I compile a lot from the command prompt. I know exactly what switches I'm using and everything else.
Excellent.
Also, the Visual Studio team, they have to pick and choose what features of the runtime and the compilers that they want to expose. And sometimes they say, hey, multi-file assemblies, we don't think that's important. So Visual Studio doesn't support that. Strong named assemblies had really lousy support in earlier versions of Visual Studio. It's gotten a little bit better now with WIDB. You can go to the property setting and it'll produce a strong name key pair for you and associate it with your assembly. But it can still be better still than that. So a lot of times I still end up leaving Visual Studio and doing things from the command prompt.
Now, you provide this feedback to the product teams.
Yeah, in fact, some of it I've even written in my books to say, man, I wish they would have done this. And
all right, and they read your books and they try to make it happen.
Yeah. There were a bunch of, I just finished editing the exception handling chapter for my book, the next edition, earlier this week. And I noticed that a bunch of things that I had criticized or made comments on had been improved.
Definitely.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Not necessarily fixed the way I would like it, but it's been improved.
Yeah, well, that model is definitely still evolving for sure,
yeah.
The exception modeling model of the CLR. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
That they have done, and they will continue to do. So, I mean, it's difficult.
I'm talking about the way it's exposed in Visual Studio and the debugger is what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Yeah. Like Visual Studio had debug exceptions menu item,
mm-hmm.
and it would pop up a dialog box with the list of exceptions, and they were sorted by namespace. So like the system namespace, and then you open that up, and you would show you the classes that were under the system namespace.
Okay.
And then it used to have, in versions 1.0 and 1.1, the ability for you to say, to treat that as a hierarchy and say for all the ones in this namespace, I want to break whenever an exception is thrown or break only on an unhandled exception. But the runtime does it all based on class inheritance hierarchy. Visual Studio did it based on namespace hierarchy, which was just stupid. So what they did in WIDB is they've actually just removed the feature to even say everything underneath. So it's still sorted by namespace hierarchy, mm-hmm. but now they don't even give you the ability to say treat this as everything that it's derived from namespace-wise.
Hmm.
So they've actually removed functionality, but it makes it better because the way they had implemented it before was just dumb.
Okay. Fair enough.
Just dumb.
Well, good. They listened to your feedback.
Yeah.
Excellent. So we'll want to check you out at the PDC, at the pre-con.
It should be a good talk.
I'll
have a bunch of good demos there. And
good.
And I'll be hanging around a lot for the week so people can come up to me at the Wintellect booth and ask questions and things like that. I'll really try to make myself available.
Fantastic. And maybe some chalk talking?
Sure.
Whiteboarding?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, hey, thanks for your time.
Oh,
it's been great chatting with you.
Thank you.
And good luck. See you at the PDC.
All right.
Cool.